You're listening to Business Forward Podcast, and I'm Ghaida Nadi, your host for this episode. For our now running campaign, I moved my business forward in its Family Business Edition. We are looking for inspiration and learnings from successful family businesses around the region. So we could not have missed speaking to Hakeem Mishri, Assistant Professor of Marketing and Academic Director of the SEMS MIM program at the AUC School of Business, as well as the CEO of his family company, MenaTech. With this unique perspective, combining both the practical and the academic knowledge, Hakeem Mishri joins Business Forward in a candid conversation about family business. Stay with us. Hello, Dr. Hakeem. I'm really happy we made this work in spite of your really busy schedule and multiple roles.
Thank you very much. Thank you. The happiness is all mine, actually.
Thank you. So which hat are you wearing today? We know that you have multiple roles, as I mentioned.
Yes. Currently, I'm wearing the hat of the academic who's currently directing the SEMS MIM Masters in International Management program, a normal faculty as well, and also the hat of the academic advisor of Tomorrow's Leaders undergraduate program, as well as the coach of the general coach of the ENGCOM competition teams who are traveling to Montreal tomorrow.
Wow. Okay. Yes. Good luck with all that. Looks like a full plate. So now we move a bit to the family business, MenaTech. So can you tell us about that and how it all started?
Yes. Yes. Actually, MenaTech started in 1972. By my uncle and my father. This started in a garage when they spotted a gap in the market. At that time, bottling companies were using or importing lubricants for the conveying belts. And these lubricants were all imported from outside. My uncle had a very good chemical experience being a chemical engineer, and he knew the know-how of how to manufacture these conveyor belt lubricants. So he started to locally manufacture them in the garage of his father. And he started to mix with actually a stick and a big bowl, the components, and trying to prepare samples and giving them to top bottling companies. This is when it all started. Later on, after bottling companies did the backward integration and they started to manufacture their own products, he moved to another area, which is powder detergents, mm-hmm. where he used to manufacture the full automatic washing machines, powder detergents, and the normal manual powder detergent, using a very novel technique, which didn't use spraying towers, which was common in manufacturing these products. Mm. Again, after big multinationals such as Procter & Gamble and Henkel entered the market, this business became obsolete. Then he found himself having to move to manufacturing adhesives for printing and packaging. The business picked up slowly until the company is now is a 100 million company with approximately 150 employees and a business which has been there for the past 51 years.
A lot of maneuvering there.
Yes.
So growing up, did you always know that you will have a big part in the business? Was that discussed or was it some sort of like unspoken agreement?
Excellent question, actually. Indeed, this was part of the discussion that started before me starting my undergraduate studies. Before this, we were discussing which area of engineering I will be joining. It wasn't an option, for example, to join medicine or to join another field.
Okay.
So it was which area of engineering are you going to join? And at that time, I had to join either the chemical engineering, but my preference was telecom engineering. Mm-hmm. So my father left me the freedom of selecting which major.
But it had to be the engineering.
Yeah, mechanical, telecom, or chemical engineering. Of course, his preference was chemical engineering to be able to technically join the company and so on. And at that time, I didn't like chemistry, so I joined the telecom engineering. And throughout the full 5 years of study of telecom engineering, all the talk was about me joining the family business. Mm-hmm. All the, I won't call it brainwashing, but at least I will call it direction that this is the family's earnings. These are the family money, the family wealth, and there needs to be somebody to protect this wealth and so on. However, my father still insisted that I have the freedom of breaking free from the family business. Upon finishing my engineering in a great degree in July, I joined the family business willingly in September 1999. So, and when I started, I did not have a role. I started by my first assignment given to me by my father, which was cleaning the factory. I had also some activities of going with delivery trucks to visit the clients and to know what they're doing, how are our products applicated, used, and so on. And also stay in the factory to see how the cooking procedures takes place, the manufacturing process, and all of these things. But I was just watching without any contribution. And then 8-9 months later, I couldn't find myself happy or satisfied out of joining the family business at all. And this is when I decided to leave the family business and go work for a couple of years in a telecom company, Alcatel. It's a French multinational company where I traveled most of the African continent, mm-hmm. planning and designing mobile networks, which was a very rewarding and a full of experience activity that I moved. While doing this, my passion for education was embedded in me. So I decided to apply for a master's in telecommunications in Canada. The day of my acceptance letter of my scholarship and my master's in McGill was the same day my father got a heart attack, and I had to leave to put this aside and join the family business once again. I resigned from Alcatel, I dropped my master's, and I went back to join the family business again without any knowledge, but with new terms that I had to say. My first term was that I have to have a clear job description. What exactly would I do? At the same year, my cousin was also joining. So we decided that he will take care of the technical part. I will take care of the commercial part. I didn't have any background in the commercial part. So I decided to conduct my MBA at AUC. And with the flow of time, I got experience in the commercial part as well as a very good academic experience in managing a business through my MBA at AUC. Looking to further refine my knowledge, I decided after finishing my MBA to pursue my PhD in marketing. And I started my PhD in marketing, not having in mind at all the academic part to teach and so on. It didn't even cross my mind. My only aim was to refine my knowledge to be able to better manage the family business. And this happened after I finished my PhD. In my last day of defense, one of the faculty here at AUC requested that I replace her for one semester, just one semester, because she had to go on sabbatical and there was no replacement. So I came as the replacement for this faculty in 2012, just to replace this faculty for one semester. And it seems that it took longer than a semester up till now.
And look how it all ended now.
Yes.
Looking back at that beginning of that story and where you are now, what do you think the first generation of your family business, what did they do right or that was helpful to ease your transition as a second generation into the leadership roles?
First, what they've done is that Dwight was discussing my intentions to join the family business. That was something very important that needs to be done early on, even before the family member or the new generation even start their undergraduate academic experience. Maybe they can decide while they're in their undergraduate studies, they decide, but definitely upon graduation, they need to have a clear decision, where would they go? It's not a decision only for the benefit of the second generation, but it's the decision for the whole family planning. And this is what I suggested in some articles that I wrote related to the family business, that the family business is two words. It's the family and the business. So there needs to be a clear planning both for the family and the business. If none of the family members of the second generation are joining, then the first generation needs at least to have a heads up early on to be able to plan how would governance go, whether there is a clear separation between management and ownership or not. If there is no succession, then there needs to be an agreement what would be done afterwards. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the business will die, especially that most family businesses are dependent on the founder, are dependent on the management of the founder. Mm-hmm. So if this kind of clear way doesn't go along, doesn't happen, then businesses would fall. A lot of people are pro that family business by time move to a model of a stock traded or a listed firm, and they advise on this. But we have many examples where families continue to manage a business and they're successful. For instance, Marriott, it's still a family business. Mm-hmm. And lots of other international businesses, there are still family businesses. So it just needs a planning, a change in the family culture that we need to plan. Just of being a family business doesn't give you an entitlement to join the business at any point in time in your life.
Right.
This is not your backup plan. This is not your back door. This is not the go-to when you fail. This is the culture that needs to change.
Makes sense, 100%. Because in addition to regular challenges that any businesses face, of course, family businesses face additional layers of challenges. So they have the regular market turbulences, the economic challenges, staffing issues, you name it. But for family businesses, what are some of the challenges that you have experienced being involved in the family business?
Well, basically, the main challenge that I faced in family businesses was, in my family business, was actually a lot of family politics, mm-hmm. a mixture between the family and the business that sometimes doesn't make the family function well, and at the same time doesn't make the business function well. So you may find yourself talking to your family members in family events about the business, and at the same time, within a business meeting, talking about family issues inside the business, or doing things not the right way that you know because you take family consideration into account.
And what's the balance there? What has worked?
Well, what should work is always the family is for the family and the business is for the business. And there needs to be objective measures of the way to act. No one said that a family business doesn't need to have a strategy, doesn't need to have a competitive framework, doesn't need to have an organizational structure that is clear and training procedures and all what we learned in business. Yes. So this was the main challenge, how to strike this balance. There is no special formula for this, but at least the awareness that we need to separate. Definitely there will be some mixture, some spillover from both, but if this awareness is there that we're now in a family setup and let the business aside, at least we're aware and we control our feelings.
Right. So you've also been involved in research about family businesses,
yes.
Even across different countries. So
yes.
What do you notice are the major characteristics that are common between Egypt and other countries, and maybe what are some differences that exist?
Definitely issues such as succession plans, governance, are common grounds between family businesses all across the world. These are topics that are, the family cycle is really a common topic that we talk about in family business all around the world. But what is specific in Egypt is related to our cultural background. So cultural factors, especially those related to the fact that we belong to a collectivist culture, really impacts so much our business performance. So when we are in an individualistic culture where there is no this such thing of group work and so on, this tribal kind of setup, success is more prevalent than in our collectivist culture, because this big mix happens, the family and the business, and we don't function in separation. We function in combination. So that was the most prevalent thing. So cultural factors were very prominent.
Another common issue that I saw coming up in literature about family business is the issue of free riders. So when more and more family members get involved, it gets more complex, and there are family free riders, so those who put less effort, but then you face the dilemma of how much ownership, how much dividends should they be getting? So
well,
what's your take on this?
My take on this is twofold. First of all, I suffered in the first, when I joined first the family business, and I did some effort in the first 9 months of my work in the family business. There were other family members who joined at the same time. And one of the things that when you graduate, you're a fresh graduate, is that you want to feel reward for what you've done. You're accustomed to getting a reward when you study well with a good grade. So you wanted to know what is the reward when you work well in the business.
Right.
So at that time, I had family members who were free riders with me. And this was a very big cause of frustration. This is a big dilemma, and the solution is very simple. Clear job description for the family member. That's number one. Clear KPIs on the criteria that are going to be used to reward the family member. As for the part related to the dividends and so on, it all boils down to the percentage share they have in the business. So it's either they have shares in the business or not, because businesses have to divide dividends according to the share percentage. As simple as this. Whether or not there are share dividends distribution or not, that's an issue altogether, because the decision to distribute dividends within a family business are really very difficult. Why? Because initially they should be based on the business needs. If the business needs a lot of money, then we will not distribute dividends. But sometimes you'll find this kind of cause or this sign of, pretext that maybe one of the family members needs money and this year we need to distribute business to help him or her. A family business manager has to be aware of these things. If the business really needs it, then we should find a way to help this family member outside the needs of the business. It's not an easy way to manage. There is no single formula to managing the family business. But the only thing I would advise people to be is to be as objective as possible and use objective measures as early as possible and all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. So do you think in general, is it easier or harder for family businesses to respond to market changes and to adapt and make big decisions, like being ahead of the curve or aligned with trends like environmental social governance, like artificial intelligence? So how do you see that?
There are factors that are really enablers for the family business to really be ahead of time. And there are factors that prohibit this as well. The factors that enable family businesses to be ahead of time or to move quickly is that the decision-making process is less complex than bigger multinationals or companies who have a very big hierarchy of organizational structure hierarchy. So in family business, decisions could be taken quickly and swiftly and respond quickly to the current changes that happen in the environment. For instance, ChatGPT that came to life, for instance, the new AI, it's just a decision between two or three family members. It doesn't have to go through many layers of or many managerial layers until it reaches the top management and be discussed in a board meeting. So this makes the family businesses more prepared to join or to respond to these current changes very quickly. On the other hand, these big multi-layered companies who need time to respond are also equipped with more resources in terms of financial and human resources that would enable them to deploy more professional solutions, more up-to-date solutions that the family businesses could afford. So, but again, our research in this area revealed that innovation increases in family businesses because of this kind of readiness to respond quickly.
Back to the point on finance, there are options for family businesses to expand their finance, but traditionally it has always been out of the profits or the dividends or own savings. But now there are many more options being considered, especially by second and third generations, like private equity, like going on the stock market. How do you see that as a second generation? And was that a point of perhaps the disagreement between you and the first generation?
It wasn't a point of disagreement, to be honest. First generation were very flexible. Their initial culture was to grow through equity only. They didn't know, they didn't want to take any debt, thinking that this is the best solution to navigate and grow the company. But this was in some situations very limiting. Since 2007, we started to change this culture. And we went looking for private equity funds to support the business. We went also looking for strategic partnerships, strategic acquisitions. And we went through this exercise approximately in the past 15 years, four times, where we had four strategic acquisitions options. And we spoke with them. We went to valuation, due diligence, and we almost reached an agreement until came the revolution and the repercussions of the revolution, followed by the economic downturn that happened to Egypt. So this idea was there. And also, we changed the culture of only relying on equity funding to debt. So we increased the leverage of the company from 2 to 3% leverage ratio to almost 40% debt leverage. So 40% debt versus 60% equity, which enabled the company to grow quicker in the past 2 to 3 years. But this was the initiative mainly of the second generation, not the first generation. They are very risk averse when it comes to the first generation. And this brings me to a very small topic that I want to add, is the family cycle, family life cycle. Here, we need to plan for the family life cycle in terms of the age of the each generation, because the most of the productivity of this age generation starts from the age of, let's say, 30, where some experience is there, up to 50 or maximum 60 years old when they're 60 years old. So in the planning process, even the age of the each generation should be planned, because the more you get older, the more you're risk averse. So you need to know exactly when the hand, plan for the handover, when would the handover happen, when, what would be the age of the first generation vis-a-vis the age of the second generation. When would this overlap happen, and then the second generation takes the lead, at which age? So this needs to be planned in the cycle itself.
True. Then my final question is, like, for some listeners who are potential second generation family business owners and are maybe skeptical of their ability to be able to carry over that responsibility because they studied something different, they have different interests, and having lived that particular experience, what do you advise
them? A very simple and very effective advice I would tell them. When you join the family business, don't look at the big picture in the beginning. Just take a very small part and try yourself in this very small part. Exert the maximum effort and make this very small part more effective. And then take another part and make it more effective, and take a smaller part. Progress in very small steps in the beginning, and don't expect that you're going to change the world. It's not like comedy and tragedy reflected in episodes and so on. No, it's an incremental work that needs patience, time. While you're improving a very small part, people would not only commend you, but they will begin building their trust in your abilities step by step. And take the part that you can really change the most, reflect on it, and exert an effort and change it. And I'm not talking a big part like the marketing department or the finance or the innovation or whatever. I'm just talking about change the way paper handling happens across the company, change the layout of communication, change the way a certain very small process happens. Think thoroughly about it and change it. Build this success so that others trust you and you trust yourself before they trust you. And then move to the second part and be patient.
Wonderful advice. Thank you so much, Dr. Hakim, for this very insightful interview. I know we could go on for so much more because I have so many more questions, but let's wrap it up at that.
Thank you very much.
And keep tuned to our campaign, focusing and highlighting more successful family businesses through the campaign, How I Moved My Business Forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Hakim Mishra'i speaking to Business Forward about his story with his family's 50-year-old business. Subscribe to our bi-weekly newsletter at businessforwardauc.com to stay tuned to more podcasts by Business Forward, the knowledge portal of the AUC School of Business.